This is Passing Judgment, a podcast about the law and how it affects you. I'm your host, Loyola Law School professor Jessica Levinson. Think of me as your personal law professor as we navigate the big legal questions of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers.
Hey, everybody, it's Jessica, and this week I want to bring you another solo episode that I hope explains all of the legal wrangling between California and the Trump administration when it comes to the Trump administration's attempt to federalize the National Guard and send National Guard members into Los Angeles, in addition to sending Marines into Los Angeles. So let's begin at the beginning, and let's begin with the president's memo attempting to federalize the National Guard. In that memo, he cited to a specific statute in Title 10, Section 12406, and yes, it is important for me to cite to the specific statute. The statute says that the president can federalize the National Guard whenever, and I'm going to quote here, either there is the rebellion or a danger of a rebellion, or the president is unable with the regular forces to execute the laws of the United States. Then, just a few sentences later, it says, when a president uses this power to federalize the National Guard, then orders for these purposes shall be issued through the governors. Now, in his memo, Trump said that there were violent protests interfering with ICE agents' activities. And put another way, he's talked about a rebellion that's obstructing the ability of ICE agents to do their jobs. So essentially, he's citing to two of the prongs in the statute I just read you. The first prong is that there's either the rebellion or a danger of a rebellion. The second prong is that the president is unable with regular forces to execute essentially federal laws. Now, if his order is effective, thousands of National Guard troops will operate under federal command as part of active duty U.S. military. And this obviously removes state control of this unit of the National Guard. So that's the memo, and that's the statute that he cites to. Let's keep moving in terms of what about the statute that we keep hearing about called the Posse Comitatus Act? And what I want to tell you is that even if President Trump properly federalized the National Guard under the statute that I just told you about, Section 12406, the Posse Comitatus Act still applies. And this means that the National Guard troops are limited. They're limited to supporting federal agents, and that means protecting or supporting property, surveillance, intelligence, essentially logistical support. The Posse Comitatus Act says the military cannot engage in direct law enforcement actions on domestic soil. So again, what are direct law enforcement actions? We're talking about arrests, searches, seizures. So in one bucket to our left, what we have is what the National Guard can do if President Trump properly authorized that they be federalized, meaning they can provide support. They can protect and support agents, property. They can provide surveillance. They can provide intelligence. But because the Posse Comitatus Act still applies, the military cannot do more. They cannot arrest, they cannot search, they cannot seize. Unless the president invokes a different statute called the Insurrection Act, meaning that the Insurrection Act is actually an exception to Posse Comitatus, or put another way, if you, as the president, properly invoke the Insurrection Act, that suspends the protections of Posse Comitatus, and it means that the military can directly engage in law enforcement actions on domestic soil. So the Insurrection Act, I'm going to move through it fairly quickly, says things like whenever the president considers that unlawful obstructions, combinations, or assemblages or rebellion against the authority of the United States make it impractical to enforce the laws of the United States in any state by the ordinary course of judicial proceedings, then essentially he gets to pull the trigger and say, we are going to use the military as a domestic law enforcement agency, as is necessary to enforce federal law and suppress the rebellion. So for this part of the Insurrection Act, really what you need is widespread unlawful conduct that is obstructing federal law, and the normal mechanisms, meaning the police and the courts, aren't working. There's another part of the Posse Comitatus Act that I want to highlight briefly, and it says the president can, quote, take such measures as he considers necessary to suppress in a state any insurrection, domestic violence, unlawful combination, or conspiracy if basically the people are deprived of state or federal rights. I'm paraphrasing a little bit at the end, but what I want us to realize is that if the president is able to invoke the Insurrection Act, then again, the prohibitions of the Posse Comitatus Act no longer apply, meaning Posse Comitatus is suspended and the National Guard would have the ability to do far more than they can do now. They can act as a domestic law enforcement agency. Yes, I know I'm repeating myself. And that means they can enforce domestic law, searches, seizures, arrests, patrols, etc. Now, are there examples of the president using the Insurrection Act? There are. Think about Little Rock desegregation in 1957. Think about the desegregation of Old Miss, the University of Mississippi, in 1962. Think about the University of Alabama in 1963. In all of those cases, presidents were trying to enforce desegregation orders or civil rights orders, and they were doing so against the wishes of governors. And that matters here, against the wishes of the governors. The governors were not helping to enforce those orders. In fact, they were being recalcitrant. And so presidents sent in the National Guard. There's another more recent example of George Herbert Walker Bush, the first George, President George Bush, sending in the National Guard in California in 1992 during the so-called Rodney King riots. But in that case, California's Governor Pete Wilson had made the request. So that was not against the wishes of the governor. And that's going to come up for us in a moment. So what happens? We have kind of the legal landscape here in the sense of we've talked about the memo, we've talked about the statutes that are at play, and now we have to talk specifically about the lawsuit. So California goes to federal court and they sue the Trump administration, saying that the Trump administration did not have the authority to federalize the National Guard. And there was a fascinating hearing in this case that was held in front of Judge Breyer, not retired Justice Breyer, but Judge Breyer, who is a district court judge in California. He is the brother of retired Supreme Court Justice Breyer. And if anybody listened to the arguments, you can absolutely hear that they are related. And it was truly stunning at times. Very similar cadence, a very similar styles, and I would offer similar writing styles as well. So I want to not summarize everything that happened in that 70-minute hearing, but talk about what Judge Breyer said. So he handed a big win to California. He issued a TRO, which is a temporary restraining order, and he gave California a win for these reasons. First, there's a question as to whether or not federal judges can even review a president's decision that the predicate facts are there to trigger Title 10, Section 12406, meaning there's a question as to whether when a president writes a memo that says there's a rebellion or a danger of a rebellion, or I'm unable to execute federal laws through the regular forces, whether or not a judge can even review that. And what Judge Breyer said is that he can rule on that question, meaning it's justiciable. He can rule on whether there's a rebellion, the danger of a rebellion, or whether the president is unable to execute the laws. And again, his first big conclusion in my mind was that federal judges do get to review these questions. Again, the questions as to whether or not the predicate facts are there, the prerequisites are there in order for the president to be able to use the statute to federalize the National Guard. Judge Breyer then said, I can be here, I can review these questions, and I don't see it. I don't think there is a rebellion, and I don't think the president is unable to execute the laws. So that's the first big part of the ruling. The issue is justiciable. I can be here, and I disagree with the president. The next part of the ruling focused on more of a procedural question, which is, were President Trump's orders actually issued through the governor? Because the language of the statute, as I said before, requires that orders be issued through the governor. And there was a significant discussion about whether or not the way the president had issued these orders had gone through the proper channels and whether or not this particular requirement was satisfied. And without summarizing about 20 to 30 to 40 minutes of discussion, I will just say Judge Breyer said no. The orders were not issued through the governor, so the statute was not satisfied in that way as well. Now, the next big thing I want to talk about with respect to Judge Breyer's decision is that there was a 10th Amendment violation. And very briefly, the 10th Amendment says that any authority that the Constitution does not give to the federal government is reserved to the states and to the people. And so Judge Breyer found a 10th Amendment violation, in my mind, essentially for two reasons. One, he found no federal authority here. He said that Trump didn't have the power under Section 12406 to federalize the National Guard. In addition, he found that Trump's actions may infringe on a state's police powers, meaning a state's power to, as a separate sovereign, protect the health, safety, welfare, and morals of its residents. Now, the final thing that Judge Breyer said is that he won't reach these bigger questions as to whether or not there are issues related to the Posse Comitatus Act, which California has argued that there are, because he says that's too speculative. He said California is basically arguing that members of the National Guard and the Marines are about to violate the Posse Comitatus Act. And Judge Breyer, and I'm, of course, paraphrasing here, said essentially, you know what, come back to me if something else happens. So that's what happened on Thursday night. Judge Breyer hands a big ruling to California, big win to California. Okay, but what happens next? What happens next is, very predictably, the losing party, in this case, the Trump administration, goes to the Ninth Circuit and they ask for emergency relief. They ask for Judge Breyer's decision to issue a temporary restraining order to be stayed, meaning to be paused. And the Ninth Circuit agreed, and they imposed something called an administrative stay, meaning a pause, until they hold a hearing on Tuesday, June 17th. And so I want to talk a little bit about what we need to look at in that particular hearing. So for the Tuesday, June 17th hearing, these are the things that I'm going to be looking for. I'm going to call out four of them. And they're basically the four we just talked about when we discussed Judge Breyer's ruling. Now, the first is whether or not orders were actually issued through the governor. That's that procedural requirement. It's part of the statute we discussed. It's part of Title 10, Section 12406. The next thing I'm going to look at is whether or not the three judges on this Ninth Circuit panel think that a president's decisions as to whether or not the predicate facts are present, whether or not there's the rebellion or a danger of rebellion, whether those questions, again, are justiciable, meaning whether a federal judge can even review what a president concludes. Third, if so, if the judges conclude that, yes, we can at least look at, we can at least review a president's decisions on these particular issues, then what standard will the judges say should be used to determine if there was a rebellion, if there was a danger of a rebellion, or if the president is unable with regular forces to execute federal law? And then finally, I'm looking at the 10th Amendment. I want to see whether or not the judges think that the 10th Amendment bars the president's actions, given that the governor objects to the federalization of the National Guard. So those are the things that I'm going to be looking for the Ninth Circuit arguments. I want to highlight a little bit more of the breaking news here, which is we actually again heard from Judge Breyer. And the Department of Justice had asked Judge Breyer to put the next hearing that he set on his calendar, basically to put it on hold. So at the end of Judge Breyer's ruling, he said, I want to have a hearing as to whether or not I should issue a preliminary injunction, which is basically the next step after a temporary restraining order. And he set arguments for June 20th. Now, once the Department of Justice successfully asked the Ninth Circuit to pause Judge Breyer's temporary restraining order, they then asked Judge Breyer to pause this scheduled hearing. And he said no. So Judge Breyer denied the Department of Justice's request to put the preliminary injunction hearing on hold until the Ninth Circuit rules on their emergency motion for a stay pending appeal. This means that the order to show cause as to why a preliminary injunction should not be ordered in front of Judge Breyer is still set for June 20th. And this is going to be a really active week ahead when it comes to this case of Newsom versus Trump, or some other people refer to it as California versus the Trump administration. Now, the final thing I want to do is just talk a little bit about the three judges on the Ninth Circuit who will be hearing this case. One of them, Judge Mark Bennett, is a Trump appointee. He was confirmed in the Senate by a vote of 72-27. And I will just offer that I think he's generally viewed as kind of conservative, moderate, and or moderate conservative and pragmatic. Now, the next judge we have is Judge Eric Miller, another Trump appointee. He was confirmed in the Senate by a vote of 53-46. And my understanding is that he's viewed as one of the most conservative judges on the Ninth Circuit. He's seen as an originalist, a textualist, and I read him as being pretty comfortable with broad executive power. Finally, there's Judge Jennifer Sung. She's a Biden appointee. She was narrowly confirmed in the Senate by a vote of 50-49 and is generally viewed as liberal. So if you had to, at this moment, just venture a guess, it looks like the Ninth Circuit could make a 2-1 decision in favor of the Department of Justice, and then we have to figure out exactly what type of relief would they grant. And that is a little bit weedy, so I'm not going to get into that until we have more information from the Ninth Circuit after the hearing. So I hope this helped to explain where we are in this important case and what we need to look for in the week and weeks ahead. And I will continue to bring you all of the legal news surrounding this case.